I call Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is Wednesday, January 25th, 2016. We're here in the Juneau Capitol. Let the record reflect that the time is 3:30 p.m. Committee members present, Vice Chair Senator Costello, Senator Stedman, Senator Machicki, and Senator Welikowski, as well as Senator Coghill. I'm expecting Senator Stoltz any moment. So thanks everyone for being here. Thank you to Anne, our recording secretary, and to Jessica, who is doing the audio for us. So today we're going to continue our updates on Alaska LNG. This hearing will focus on a report from the project's fiscal team. Since purchasing TransCanada's share of the Alaska LNG project, the state of Alaska has become a full-fledged 25% owner in what will be the largest project in North America. As representatives of the owners of the project, the people of Alaska, it is our duty to scrutinize all the elements of it. We will perform our duty to analyze the economics, the governance, and other issues surrounding Alaska LNG project. That due diligence continues today. So I welcome Mr. Bill McMahon from Exxon, Mr. Dave Van Tile from BP, Mr. Leo Erhard from ConocoPhillips, Mr. Fritz Krusen from the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation, and Deputy Commissioner Marty Rutherford from the Department of Natural Resources. So welcome. I will let you have the opportunity to make your opening announcements or comments, and then I know you have a PowerPoint to take us through. So welcome.
So I guess we elected for AGDC to go first for alphabetical order.
Wonderful, Mr. Krusen. All right, so if you would introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your comments. So
for the record, I am Fritz Krusen, interim president of AGDC, the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation, and I'm sort of the new person here. So at some time, I'd like to take the chance to introduce myself for those of you who don't know me. Some of you do know me, but I don't want to do that right now. What I do want to do is assure you that the professionals at AGDC are still ready to go. The project professionals, the commercial professionals, they're ready to move this project forward. Does that do it? That's about all.
Yeah, that's about it.
Okay. So anyway, so with assistance from the committee, with the effort of the legislature, we achieved the transfer of the state's representation from TransCanada to AGDC in what were called the midstream components. And that on the project side, the transition has gone well. We're making the cash calls. The project have always been good to us about letting AGDC have sort of full visibility into the project, but now we're a full 25% partner. So I think that concludes my remarks.
Very good. Thank you. Mr. Ventano, are you next?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, B is next, so... my name is Dave Van Tile, and I'm the regional manager for BP here in Alaska. And I've been working for BP here in Alaska for over 31 years, the last several of which have been involved with working to get Alaska's gas resource to market. And now I have the privilege of working in my current roles, both on the fiscal team and as a management committee member on the Alaska LNG project. I'm really pleased to be here along with my colleagues who are working together to provide an update. In this case, on the Alaska LNG project, my comments will be from BP's perspective, what we think about the progress to date. Because the success of the Alaska LNG project is critical to our future business here in Alaska. And it's critical to the future of the state of Alaska. And to so many Alaskans who will benefit from the project, both directly and indirectly. This past year, 2015, has been an important and we think a very successful one for the project. Alaska LNG continues to make progress towards becoming a reality. And I think it's worth taking just a moment to reflect back on the important achievements of this past year. Back in February, the project filed 12 draft resource reports with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, and that totaled over 8,000 pages worth of documentation. The very next month, in March, the FERC issued their notice of intent to proceed with an environmental impact statement, and that opened a 9-month public comment period on the project. In May, the project received authorization from the Department of Energy to export up to 20 million tons per annum of LNG to non-free trade agreement countries, and that's coupled with a prior authorization to export to free trade agreement countries. And that authorization sends a huge message to the world, and it's a major step forward for the project. The Alaska LNG project was able to essentially jump the queue over a number of other U.S. LNG projects that were also awaiting an export authorization. I think that's a feat that we owe that's due in large part to the hard work that was done by our federal delegation on behalf of Alaska. In October, the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission increased the maximum allowable offtake rate from Prudhoe Bay for gas to a level sufficient to support the LNG export from Prudhoe Bay. And they also authorized injection of carbon dioxide from the gas treatment plant into the main Prudhoe Bay Reservoir. Also in October, AOGCC established a gas offtake rate at the Point Thompson unit that supports the Alaska LNG project. And those are authorizations that we have never had before, and now we have them. So that's also an important, essential step in the project moving forward. In November, as Mr. Cruzan mentioned, the state of Alaska agreed to acquire TransCanada's 25% interest, and now AGDC is the state's voice in the midstream part of the project, as well as the downstream. In December, BP, ExxonMobil, ConocoPhillips, and the state of Alaska all approved the 2016 work program and budget. And that authorizes over $200 million in spend to continue advancing the project. And that work is carrying on even today. And as you just heard on Monday from Steve Butt, the project manager, the project team is indeed making very good progress on those pre-FEED deliverables. We also worked through a number of commercial issues during the course of 2015, and we continue to make progress on other issues. Beginning last February, we worked with the administration to understand a bit more about the administration's Plan B in the event that the Alaska LNG project, for whatever reason, was not to proceed, and the implications that Plan B had for our joint work so that we could continue working together on the Alaska LNG project, which indeed we have. This past summer, we responded both verbally and in writing to public notice of new confidentiality regulations proposed for AGDC, expressing our desire for terms that facilitated AGDC's full and equal participation in the project, because we truly believe that's essential to our success, while also protecting the project's competitive advantages. Throughout 2015, we've worked with the administration in defining a property tax framework for the project, and that framework has been communicated through the Municipal Advisory Group Project Review Board process. We heard the administration's desire to prioritize a withdrawal agreement, and BP successfully negotiated and executed a gas availability agreement this past December, along with ConocoPhillips and the state of Alaska. And BP also looks forward to continuing to work with the state as it desires to progress any other such agreements. We're also making progress on other commercial fronts, including support for the DNR in making its RIK election, defining fiscal terms for the project, working with the state on the manner in which in-state gas supply would be provided, and other commercial issues. So while there is still much work to be done, we do continue to make progress. Now, we understand the governor's recent statements about the need for additional progress, and frankly, we agree. Just as we said at our last legislative update this past September, the agreements we're actively negotiating are quite complex and will impact this multi-billion dollar project that will span decades. Now, given the complicated issues we're working through and the fact that each of the parties in the negotiations has its own needs and concerns, I don't think it should surprise us that those negotiations can be difficult. Last time we spoke, about hitting speed bumps along the way as actually an encouraging sign that we are tackling the tough issues and still moving forward. And that continues to be the case. Now, BP desires to get these agreements done as soon as possible, but we also recognize that it's essential to all the parties that those agreements are done well. BP is committed, just as we have been throughout this process, to working out our remaining issues as quickly and as fairly as possible. We're encouraged that the project continues to make real, tangible progress as measured by those key external milestones we talked about. And BP remains actively engaged to continue progressing the Alaska LNG project, both with the technical work and the associated commercial work. Given the current economic environment, 2016 looks to be a challenging year for all of us. We at BP and we as Alaskans know what it means to face challenges. The best way we have found is to do so together. That's the path that was envisioned in the January 2014 Heads of Agreement. It's the path that was forged by this legislature with the passage of SB 138, and BP remains committed to progressing in an aligned way forward on Alaska LNG. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Van Tuyl. Mr. Earhart.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Leo Earhart. I'm Vice President of Commercial Assets for ConocoPhillips. I live in Anchorage, and I've been in this role for about 9 months now. In my role, I've got accountability for the Cook Inlet-operated assets, Prudhoe Bay non-operated assets, our TAPS and other pipeline interests, our aviation, and important today's conversation, our AKLNG projects. In my 30 years industry experience, I've worked LNG projects in business development, project development roles, capacities across the Middle East, North and West Africa, and now here in Alaska, and I'm very proud to be part of this project and part of this broader team. For the Alaska LNG project, my role is a project owner and a ConocoPhillips representative. My team's role is to integrate all the project aspects, technical, commercial, marketing. Our objective, like those seated with me, is to monetize economically ANS gas resources. ConocoPhillips continues to support this project. We continue to work to progress commercial and technical aspects, but we have to be realistic about the project in this current price environment, and we have to be realistic about the commercial challenges that sit in front of us. Our industry faces weak oil prices not seen for more than a decade, and weak natural gas prices that have not been seen for 15 years or more. Together, this has created challenges to our industry as we deal with greatly diminished revenue streams. The AKLNG project faces significant economic headwinds. Low oil and gas prices have depressed Asia LNG prices by 60% since early 2014. The LNG market is very tight, if not even oversold, for 2016. But fortunately, we're not trying to sell into this market today. Prices will recover. We will be able to sell to a buoyant market in the future, but we just don't know when. In these times, we have to be careful and really careful stewards of our cash and closely manage all of our expenditures. This applies to all of our projects, including AKLNG. We'll work with our AKLNG partners to find cost savings in our 2016 spend, just as we've done for our Alaska and our worldwide portfolio. As you will hear from Bill in the joint presentation, there's a long list of commercial agreements that need to be completed to support the special session. Unfortunately, we've not made progress on these agreements compared to what we had hoped for this time in the process. As most of you are aware, the governor has identified a list of agreements that he wants to see completed before the special session. This will be a very difficult task to accomplish. Of particular concern to us is the gas supply agreement. As ConocoPhillips testified in February, June, and September, the gas supply agreement is foundational for the project. It is the basis for determining the rate and total volume of gas to be supplied to the project from Prudhoe and Point Thompson. It directly or indirectly sets equity participation levels. It says what happens if volumes are not supplied, for example, if a field has a problem or there's an opportunity to increase production. ConocoPhillips believes that the gas supply agreement is one of the key agreements required for the legislature to consider the project and consider action on the fiscal contract. This agreement is required for the feed decision as well. We testified in September that it's crucial to agree to this as soon as we can to ensure the project has a solid commercial foundation upon which the legislature can ratify its legislation and pass the support for a constitutional amendment vote. We're very aware that the commercialization of ANS gas is important to all, and should we find an impasse to these agreements, ConocoPhillips will not stand in the way of the project and will make our gas available to the state on commercial reasonable terms. These are the gas access agreements that Dave referenced a few moments ago. Regarding the process, ConocoPhillips remains committed and engaged with the other parties to complete all the agreements on the table. Further, we're encouraged by the state's ongoing engagement and progress on the project. This includes the governor's accessibility and his personal engagement in our meetings and things. We appreciate their ongoing effort to find a way forward in a timely manner. I want to thank the chair and the committee members for the opportunity to testify and hear my remarks today.
Thank you, Mr. Earhart. Before you proceed, Mr. McMahon, I just want the record to reflect that Senator Stoltz joined us several minutes ago.
Chair Giesel, members of the Senate Resources Committee, for the record, my name is Bill McMahon. I'm a senior commercial advisor for ExxonMobil. I have over 30 years of experience with the company, and I've worked on the commercialization of Alaska natural gas since 1992. ExxonMobil remains committed to AKLNG and believes this project is the best way for developing Alaska North Slope natural gas resources. ExxonMobil, as a leaseholder of natural gas on the North Slope, has diligently undertaken various individual and joint activities to commercialize ANS natural gas. We're now pursuing the Alaska LNG project, or AKLNG, with the state of Alaska and with representation from AGDC and with BP and with ConocoPhillips. We're following the framework that was set out by the state back in 2014 through the Heads of Agreement, as well as Senate Bill 138. Under this agreed framework, AKLNG has achieved significant project and regulatory milestones. The pre-FEED effort alone, with ExxonMobil as the lead party, will cost over $500 million, with ExxonMobil providing about a third of the funding and two-thirds of the project personnel. ExxonMobil appreciates the way that the Alaska legislature worked during the special session to provide funding to AGDC so that the 2016 work program and budget can be approved, and so that the pre-FEED work can continue uninterrupted. So the current AKLNG project schedule calls for completing the pre-FEED deliverables in 2016, and that's going to position all the participants to make a decision about entering the next phase, the FEED phase, a phase that's going to expected to cost over $1 billion. Now, as ExxonMobil considers this decision in the stage gate process about whether to enter FEED or not, we'll be evaluating the project's potential commercial viability and potential technical viability by assessing the following. We'll be looking at the project capital requirements and the execution schedule. How much does it cost? How long will it take to build? We'll be assessing the outlook to get FERC approvals and other regulatory authorizations in a timely fashion. We'll be looking at the LNG market and the confidence that they have, as well as buyer support. We'll also be looking at the business environment, including the LNG price outlook and the availability of materials, equipment, and qualified contractors and vendors. And then finally, we'll be looking to the project and enabling fiscal and commercial agreements. As I've testified before, a key FEED requirement for ExxonMobil is a mutually acceptable fiscal contract that provides competitive, predictable, and durable terms. Now, ExxonMobil is also cognizant that an affirmative vote for FEED by all the participants is dependent on the availability of near-term cash in today's challenging economic environment. Now more than ever, we're reminded that projects must be extremely cost competitive to survive the inevitable ups and downs of the market cycle. As Steve Budd highlighted on Monday, the AKLNG parties continue to evaluate opportunities to reduce overall cost through various engineering and technical options. These options and efforts will be critical to support the project's economic viability and position AKLNG to be competitive in the world market. When the producers and the administration are aligned and ready, legislative action on project enabling agreements will be sought, consistent with Senate Bill 138. ExxonMobil believes that the support of all stakeholders, including the ANS leaseholders, the state of Alaska, and its citizens, is necessary for a successful project. Actions of ExxonMobil to complete the pre-FEED, negotiate commercial and fiscal agreements, and secure timely regulatory approvals demonstrate our commitment to advance AKLNG. I thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today, and I'll ask Marty to give her remarks.
Very good.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Marty Rutherford, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Natural Resources. I, too, would like to thank you for this opportunity to speak with you today with our co-ventures on AKLNG. I also want to just say thank you again for the support you provided to us during the fall special session that allowed us to buy out TransCanada's interest and transfer that interest to the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation, which provides us a very streamlined voice in the project, and I think that is in everyone's best interest, and it certainly, I think, eased the discussions on the project with the project team. I would also like to recognize the outstanding progress that the technical project has made. We feel that they have progressed extremely diligently. They've undertaken aspects that the administration wanted them to consider, such as an analysis on the 48-inch pipe, bringing it up to the same level of a pre-FEED review as the 42-inch pipe. And they've been very diligent and will continue to be, on trying to reduce the project costs, which certainly is in everyone's interest since we need LNG to be competitive in the world market. This administration is now very committed to the AKLNG project, and we're very committed to completing the project agreements in as timely a fashion as is possible. And you, I'm sure, saw that reflected in the governor's January 18th letter to the producers. But as he indicated in his letter, we are very concerned at the slow pace of the commercial agreements. It is clearly the governor's goal to have commercial agreements available to the legislature for a spring special session. It is a spring special session approval of the agreements that would allow us to get to a constitutional amendment and move that constitutional amendment to a general election in November of 2016. While I know you've heard from each of the parties that that is a very challenging schedule, we recognize that as well. But we are hopeful that we still can attain that because we do not want to see any slippage on the decision to move into FEED. And we would note that we are prepared to hit that timeline. We will throw everything we have at it, and we have been working very diligently with our commercial parties. And we have been making progress, but we will have to step up the pace in order to make the spring special session schedule. So with that, again, I'd like to say thank you for the opportunity to be here today, and we'll try to answer your questions.
Thank you very much, Deputy Commissioner. You have a PowerPoint to present to us. How would you like the committee to offer questions to you during the presentation or after? Do you have a preference?
Chair Giesel, we would welcome those throughout the presentation.
That sounds great. You just presented in the other body's Resources Committee, and they have a very long meeting time. Ours is a bit shorter, so I just wanted you to be apprised that we have an hour and 5 minutes left for this meeting. So I'll let you go ahead and begin your slide presentation.
For the record, Bill McMahon with ExxonMobil. We were last before y'all in September of this year, and so we were going to open with slide two, just highlight the progress that's been made since the last time we met. Cover through this fairly quickly because a lot of these achievements have been highlighted in the opening remarks. We do have the approval of the 2016 WP&B. That fully funds the remaining FEED deliverables. pre-fee deliverables. Thank you, Mr. Van Tile. We've had the transition of the TransCanada interest, and that has been a seamless transition. We really appreciate the work of the administration, AGDC, and TransCanada to make sure that that went smoothly. And as a matter of fact, some key TransCanada personnel are still working on the project. They've been seconded in via contract with the lead party. We do have the AOGCC authorizations, both for gas offtake and an area injection order for CO2 into Prudhoe Bay. And then I'll highlight this last bullet that, as we go around the state and have public hearings about our project, one of the top feedback we get from Alaskans is, how are we going to get access to Alaska gas? And so AGDC has stepped in to fill that that need, and they've recently formed an in-state gas aggregator subsidiary to accumulate supplies from the project and work on distribution plans to get those to Alaskans. So if there's no questions, we'll go to slide three. This is a slide that we've presented to you all before, and the only difference here is we've taken out TransCanada, AGDC squarely in there, and I will highlight on the AKE LNG Project LLC that there are plans for AGDC to join that in the future, and so we've got that annotated as a footnote.
Great. You answered a question I was about to ask. Thank you. Any other questions on this slide? Seeing none. Go ahead.
Okay, so slide four encapsulates all the work that Steve Budd and the project team are doing. And so I won't linger on this slide very long because Steve gave a comprehensive proposal, a comprehensive update on Monday. And we use this slide to highlight what the project team is doing and then what the venture participants are doing. And so we'll drive forward here. Slide five is a diagram to help illustrate what's inside the actual AKE LNG project: transmission lines, gas treatment plant, pipeline, LNG plant, storage and loading. But we do have some important activities outside that circle. The work that's going on at Prudhoe Bay to prepare to make gas available to the project, as well as the gas development at Point Thompson to make gas available. And then off to the side, we have the work that AGDC is doing for the in-state gas facilities. So, everything on this chart is important to us. When we talk about the project investment itself, it's the things inside the circle. And so this is our jumping off spot on slide six about venture participant work. And this is handled differently than the project teamwork. When Steve Butt comes and speaks to you, it's on behalf of all the project participants and his team, co-located in one office, participants from all the different owners, working for their goal on the technical work. When we do venture participant work, this work necessarily has representatives from all five parties involved representing their interest to move these forward. We've got gas production, making sure that gas is available to produce into the project. We have commercial agreements. We're going to spend a lot of time talking about that, given the keen interest on that. We have the fiscal agreements that are necessary, the regulatory work with DOE and FERC. And then finally, we have our external affairs and government relations efforts to be the face of the project with the community. And so what we'll do is we'll trip through these green boxes as we provide an update in the different areas. And so as far as slide seven, the headlines here are around the AOGCC work. They approved an amended Prudhoe Bay field gas offtake authorization back in October, and this is going to allow gas to be produced at higher rates than previously authorized and at rates sufficient to support the project. Also included was an authorization to be able to inject CO2 and other byproducts coming from the gas treatment plant from other fields into the Prudhoe Bay Reservoir so that we can be good stewards of our environment. And then finally, a field gas offtake authorization was granted at Point Thompson as well for a gas expansion project, and that was in October. We've shown this chart before. This is just a nice visualization. You know, these numbers have squiggles in front of us. They're provisional, but it shows how we take the working interest in the two fields, come up with a composite working interest on an assumed blending of the two fields. Then in the next column, we say if the state of Alaska elects to take royalty in kind, which when you blend Prudhoe and Thompson is about 13%. And then finally taking that last step, if the producers elect to pay their production tax as gas or TAG, as we like to call it, that's how you accumulate a total gas share in the range of 25%. And of course, that is the impetus for the state being an investor in the project. And on the next slide, we show what that looks like of ExxonMobil, ConocoPhillips, BP, and the state of Alaska all having gas shares and how that translates into shares in the project. And so you can see that we now have AGDC lined up across the bottom, owning and investing in the gas treatment plant, the pipeline, and the LNG plant. And then, of course, the gas comes out of the project, and then the parties handle the LNG marketing.
Yes, Senator Michiki had a question.
You know, Alaskans are confused about the complexity of the gas sharing agreement. You know, one might think that you could just sign slide 9 and be all set. But can you talk about some of those complexities for helping people understand why it's a difficult undertaking?
I'll start. Senator Michiki through the chair. Leo Earhart for the record. Probably the place to start is to recognize the unprecedented nature of the project that's being developed here. We have probably the only project in the world that's been sourced by two separate fields with different interests across those fields. And this doesn't happen frequently in our industry. When it does, very often there's a proceeding process that goes that the participants go through that unitizes the fields, normalizes those equities, and then simplifies agreements, arrangements. So that's the first point to start. The project is sourced by two fields. There are a number of complexities that brings into bear. There are units that handle the operation of each of the fields that source gas and into the project. And so we want to make sure that those fields retain their responsibilities of governance for what they are supposed to do, and that's separate than what is supposed to be done by the governing group that runs the AKLNG project. So that, again, you've got to align those things and make sure that that's covered. A second area of complexity is the state's synthetic equity, or the equity that's created by the royalty in kind taxes gas. This has to be accommodated in the gas balancing agreement or the gas supply agreement. And there are multiple ways that one could go about doing that. But the state has to have a clear line of sight to its resource base, so it understands the scheduling on which it's going to get its gas, and then has an opportunity to participate in whatever marketing mechanism it needs to down the value chain. So this turns out to be fairly complicated. Again, probably one of a kind. I'm not aware of a royalty in kind taxes gas structure that's come into a major LNG project. So it's very much not a serial number 1001. I mean, it is very much a serial number 001 contract to be written. So those are some of the items there. I just want to mention one more item on the back end is the question of equity marketing versus JV marketing. And depending on how that is handled, that can help streamline the contract or, conversely, complicate the contract. And so we're working through all of those issues as we try to come to a four-party accord, the three producers and the state.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dave Antile with BP. Just to supplement everything that Mr. Earhart said, which was quite a good summary. In a sense, Senator Michicki's question about, you know, gosh, what you're hearing from constituents, why couldn't you just sign slide 9, I guess it was, and be done with it. I understand it was offered in cheek, but in a sense, if every day the gas production shares were as shown and the marketing demand was as shown, it would certainly simplify the complexity that we're dealing with. But the fact of the matter is the production from the fields on the North Slope does vary with time. There are turnarounds where a facility is down for a period, and therefore there's changes in what portion is coming from which field. Because those field equities are different, then that changes the entitlements. Those have to match up with the long-term contracts we'll each have with the market at the other end. Now, if at the same time, that's on the upstream end, those can change. At the same time, the demand in the market can change. And from month to month, a particular buyer may say that I don't need a cargo this month, or I can't take a cargo for whatever reason, and maybe they need two cargoes the next month. Those sorts of flexibilities need to be considered as well, in addition to the things that Mr. Earhart mentioned. So it does indeed make for a complicated arrangement. We have entered into gas balancing agreements around the world with other LNG projects, but this project does offer some pretty unique complexities.
So for clarification, follow-up question to that. So you've been talking about the gas supply and balancing, and that's an agreement really between the producers. Is the state involved in that as well? Deputy Commissioner.
Senator Geisel, Madam Chairman, Marty Rutherford, Department of Natural Resources. The state will be a party to this because we need to have a direct window into both the supply and the delivery and to feed the contracts that we'll be entering into on the other end with the LNG purchasers. So we are involved. We are not working interest owners, so we're a derivative. So we are interested in the structure that they put together, and it needs to accommodate the state's interest as a derivative and not being a working interest owner. The producers, all three of them, have been very good at recognizing what kind of things need to be protected on the state's interest. And so we're involved, but we are not, because we're not a WIO, we're actually not going to be a signatory to the actual agreement.
Thank
Madam
you.
Chair, if I could
yes.
add two additional points. One other element that this contract attempts to accomplish is to provide a function of mutual aid between the two fields. It's a great benefit to have a major LNG project with multiple fields, because it's a way of risk sharing across the fields. And so it's a good thing to have multiple sources of gas. We recognize that there's going to be the need from time to time that one field can be down, the other field can be down, and we want to be able to share gas between those fields, coming up with arrangements, mechanisms of sharing that gas, notification periods, repayment methodologies, repayment timing, the value in case it can't be repaid, risk to the reservoir, if these occurrences happen late in the field life. These are all things that have to be contemplated. And then I guess I just want to make sure that everyone in the committee is just aware of the central function almost of this particular agreement. Yes, the governance is important. Yes, the fiscals are important. You know, yes, the RIK and TAG are fantastically important considerations for us. This agreement monitors the fiscal flows. It establishes the equities of participation, either directly or indirectly. We're not quite sure yet. And it's also going to be central to banks who look at the project for financing reasons. They will want to understand where's the gas come from, what controls the flow of gas into the project, to make sure that revenues are sufficient for the clearance ratios they'll be looking for. And then lastly, the buyers may have the same interest to look into these agreements and say, where's the gas coming from? I know a lot about Prudhoe. I know a lot about Point Thompson. How does the gas flow and get into the project? How can we be assured that this contract we're going to sign up with you guys has sufficient resource behind it? And so it really does have quite a central place in the project that's, again, unique.
Very good. So we've heard Deputy Commissioner allude to the goal of having the legislature approve certain contracts by May or so. What do you think the likelihood is of, well, what do you think the likelihood is of achieving that with the gas balancing? And then that's for any of you.
Madam Chairman, I'll start. We've been at this for 2 years. Mm-hmm. You know, we've just described for you the complexity, you know, what it has to do. You know, it's the basis for which we get comfort in spending, you know, a gross 50 plus billion dollars on an LNG project. So, you know, we look at the complexity, we look at the timeline, we look at what we've been through in order to write these drafts. And, you know, we are concerned that, you know, it takes so much time, even to take an idea, to take it to drafting, takes so much time and trial and error and consideration and wailing and gnashing of teeth, that it just takes a long time to get there. Okay, and so that is our concern, is we see that it's unlikely from just the amount of time that's left in front of us to try and conclude an agreement of this complexity.
You know, you're explaining it to the committee, but the public is also listening, and so I appreciate the length and clarity of your explanations. Thank you. Further questions? Senator Costello.
Thank you. Mr. Earhart, you had mentioned that the team's not making significant progress. And so my question has to do with not just why, but what needs to change in order for you to make significant progress.
Right. So, Madam Chair, Senator Costello, for the record, this is Leo Earhart. I think the statement I made was that while we've seen terrific progress on the technical aspects of the project, those things which Steve covered, Dave adequately covered them in his remarks as well, that on the commercial side, you know, we're just not as far along as we would like to be. We'd like to be in a position where we have these things behind us, and where we can, you know, fully support engaging the legislature and getting support for a constitutional amendment. That's just not where we are. And so that was my remark. There are many other aspects of the project which have made terrific progress and are on schedule, frankly. So, but when we come to those commercial agreements, you know, what has to change? We have to be inventive. We have to be creative. We have to be flexible. We have to look towards natural balance points between the parties try as best we can to stand in each other's shoes and recognize that there are pre-existing equity positions that exist out there, and we're trying to use those equity positions to leverage into a project of great magnitude, scope, complexity, and cost. So, you know, how do we do all that? And we don't stand here and accuse each other of not doing that, but we say we have to do that more. We have to do that better. And that's the only formula I could provide for you.
Follow up?
So you're a team, and I think every Alaskan knows what a team is, whether it's a soccer team or the legislative team that, you know, we are members of. Is in any team, the communication has to be efficient, and this is for anybody. Are answers being provided quick enough? Is communication happening fast enough?
Senator Costello, through the chair, And we have dedicated teams.
Identify yourself, please, Mr. McMahon, for the record.
Bill McMahon, ExxonMobil, for the record. We have teams dedicated for each of these agreements, a team working on the fiscal agreement, team working on the venture agreements, team working on the gas supply and balancing, and you know, the hallmark of a high-performing team is, you know, frequent meetings, frequent communications, and you know, I'll echo what Mr. Earhart has said, is it's, you know, the key is you know, making sure we have a clear understanding of positions, and trying to find a way to bridge the gaps in that. You know, sometimes you have option A and option B, and it's not just pounding those two options. It's sometimes the team can come together and find something inventive like an option C that is satisfactory to all five parties involved. And so, you know, I say we have good communication, and we just need to continue the efforts. You know, I'll also echo that these are very complicated, one-of-a-kind agreements. And so, you know, they do take time. You know, we're not going to move them forward for approval until all five parties are ready and can support those. And, you know, we each have our objectives we're trying to achieve. And so, you know, trying to find that sweet spot where everyone can sign up for those.
Just one final question. And
follow-up, Senator Costello.
Thank you. Deputy Commissioner Rutherford, how much of your time is dedicated to this project?
Madam Chairman, Senator Costello, about 150%. it's virtually all of my time.
Thank you.
Good. Senator Michicki, you had a follow-up.
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for anyone that chooses to answer, is the gas balancing complexity in any way due to operatorship when you think about the different up, mid, and downstream operation and marine transportation? Or is the system sort of a unified system when it comes to operating?
Senator Michicki, through the chair, I wouldn't say that operatorship has really been a factor in the discussions. I think the commercial complexities with the arrangement, as have been described here, are sufficient complexity in themselves. So no, I don't think that has been a barrier.
So Leo Earhart, for the record, Mr. Michicki, through the chair, I agree with what Mr. Van Tile said, and don't believe that has been an issue. These are complex agreements because of all the things they're trying to do. We're just trying to see past, you know that operatorship question is down the road. You know, that's going to be covered in governance agreements, and we've made relatively good progress on those.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? All right.
Bill McMahon, for the record, ExxonMobil. Okay, so going on to slide 10, this is the page where we highlight the commercial activities that are going on. And what we've done, I will not linger on this slide. I'll go right to slide 11, where we've actually added a slide to go through each of the agreements and let you know where we are on those. So the first one we have here is the governance for the long-term venture, including expansions. This governance agreement will govern how we execute the pre-FEED phase, how we will actually construct the project, engineering, procurement, and construction, EPC, and it will also govern the project for the 30-plus years of operation. We're making good progress on these agreements. We've got contract text that we're advancing. And while we do have some issues that are outstanding, they're likely to be resolved at the end, you know, along with the fiscals and the gas supply agreement. So, you know, this is an area where we're making good progress. And, yeah, it's really important for each of the parties at this table to make sure that their interests are represented in those agreements, because you know, when you sign those agreements, you're going to be living under those for decades to come. We've already talked a lot about the gas supply to the project, gas supply, gas balancing, gas dedication. As a team, we're working to try to get alignment on a common structure. There's a couple of alternatives that are under consideration. And one thing I'll highlight from the state of Alaska's perspective, this is the agreement that's going to give the state of Alaska and their LNG buyers clear line of sight to the state's right to lift gas, not as a working interest owner, but as a lifter of royalty in kind and taxes gas. And so there's a lot of things that we need to work in this agreement to make sure that the state of Alaska looks just like BP, ExxonMobil, and ConocoPhillips. The gas LNG lifting rights from the project, the way I like to describe this is the gas supply agreement is going to tell us what we're going to do, and the lifting rights agreement is going to tell how we're going to do that. Mr. Van Tile talked about scheduling cargoes when those LNG carriers show up. You need to have a set of rules around who has call, whose ships come in at what time. If someone's leaving LNG in the tank and it's getting towards tank tops, what are the remedies? A lot of things that we experience on taps right now with the movements of oil.
Dave Van Tile with BP. Just to supplement what Mr. McMahon said, things that you might expect to see in that agreement are the terms that describe how the system will be used. What are the rules for being able to actually use the system? And things like Bill just said, minimum send requirements to make sure that the LNG plant can actually run, an annual delivery plan, all those sorts of nuts and bolts to exactly how the LNG system will be operating and be included in these gas and LNG lifting rights agreements.
Thank you. Bill McMahon, ExxonMobil. In the area of in-state gas, AGDC really has two sides of the same coin to work here. They're coming up with the state's preferred commercial structure for in-state gas distribution. How is gas going to leave the flange in the project and go out and meet community needs? And at the same token, with their aggregator subsidiary, they also need to come up with how is gas going to be supplied to the aggregator to feed this distribution system. And so key agreements in there that are of keen interest to the people of Alaska, as well as the legislature and the administration. We've also highlighted some other agreements that are being worked here. Gas treatment plant byproduct handling. Mr. Van Tile, you want to mention a bit about that?
Okay. Mr. McMahon, I do. This is Dave Van Tile with BP. The byproduct handling agreement, this is basically an offshoot of the AOGCC authorization that was received in October. We have an area injection order that says we can take byproducts from the gas treatment plant and inject those into the Prudhoe Bay Reservoir. So the question comes for the right to do that, especially for those byproducts that weren't sourced from Prudhoe Bay, is there a fee associated with being able to use those facilities to re-inject that gas? So that's an issue that's being worked by the Prudhoe Bay owners and among the members of the fiscal team to see to resolve that sort of issue of keen interest to those that would be injecting their byproducts into Prudhoe Bay.
Moving on to field cost allowance, coming out of the Prudhoe Bay field, we've been producing there for decades. We have a settlement agreement that specifies how field costs will be paid for royalty gas that's going to be lifted from Prudhoe Bay. We don't have such a settlement agreement at Point Thompson, and so the parties think it would be prudent to go ahead and get that agreed up front. And so we're going to be working an agreement around what kind of field cost is allowed for gas and liquids out of Point Thompson. Along those same lines at Point Thompson, we have some non-standard lease forms in the unit, some sliding scale royalty leases and some net profit share leases. And the parties are endeavoring to convert those to a fixed royalty percentage. That would allow the state to have an increased gas royalty in kind take and increase their participation in the project. The parties are working on that conversion. And then finally, we have the LNG marketing structures in relation to the state's LNG share. Ms. Rathbone, would you like to speak to that?
Yes, Mr. McMahon, I would. Madam Chair and Senators, this refers to the state's methodology for how it would market its gas in either through a joint relationship with one or more of the producers or as called for in SB 138 where it says that each of the producers will provide the department or the state a method of purchasing, disposing of, or marketing our royalty gas and taxes gas on the same or substantially the same terms as they do their own. So those are bilateral discussions. So we are looking at various methodologies for by which the state would market its share of the gas.
Bill McMahon with ExxonMobil, and I'll just echo, you know, this is one of the key things that Senate Bill 138 provided for is to make sure that the state of Alaska was not at a disadvantage when disposing of its LNG share. And so to draw a line under this page, these are the agreements that we're working on. They'll support the DNR's royalty in kind election, and they'll also support a special session to approve the contracts as well as the proposed fiscal terms.
So a question for Deputy Commissioner Rutherford. These contracts that are being negotiated, who is the negotiator on behalf of the state for this?
Madam Chairman, the two lead negotiators for the state of Alaska are gentlemen by the name of Ken Meinsinger with Greenberg Traurig and Manzer Iser with Milbank, and they are the lead negotiators. They work directly with myself and the Commissioner of Revenue and the Attorney General. And we also have regularly scheduled meetings with the governor, and AGDC is a part of those discussions as well. So depending upon, if I might just expand on that just a tad, they are the lead negotiators, but on Friday when we're going to have a discussion about the between AGDC, State of Alaska, and the committee, we'll be sharing the matrix method that we use for working these issues because there are subject matter experts both inside the agencies and external contractors who assist the negotiators as support, and then policy issues are raised, elevated, and fed. The information is fed back. We have regular dialogue on that. So we'll be going through that in much more detail. We'll also be identifying who the lead entity is. Sometimes it's AGDC with consultation by Department of Natural Resources and Department of Revenue. Sometimes it's DNR with consultation with AGDC. So each of the various issues, sometimes entire agreements, are led by a particular agency with involvement by the other. And that complexity is actually, we have identified for you what statutes actually drive that complexity and involvement. We've got it now working fairly well, I will say, and we're going to have an opportunity to talk about that in more detail.
On Friday. Okay, great. I do have more questions about that, so that'll be good to elaborate on. Good. Thank you. Yes, Senator Coghill.
Probably just for a review on my part and for those listening in, selling a gas on the market is one of the things that's been highlighted by this administration. So could you just give us a context of the different styles of marketing that you all would have to come to an agreement on? I know that we've heard one phrase, and that was venture marketing, joint venture marketing, and then individual marketing. Can you tell me how those get put in a context so that people know that if we're going off selling our gas, that's well within our right, but how would we do it with you is maybe less of a knowledge base to Alaskans. And certainly I struggle through some of those issues. So just give me a context on the marketing part. Certainly I know fiscals have a big part of that, but you have to have enough molecules to go off and do it, and we're assuming at that point you do. So can you give me a context? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Coghill, through the Chair, Dave Antile with BP. I'll start. At the highest level, there's two forms of marketing that with which I'm familiar, and both of which BP is involved with in various projects around the world. One is something called joint venture marketing, where the LNG that's produced out of a project is actually basically collected together and marketed by a joint venture. So all of the, if we had 18 million tons coming out of the Alaska LNG project, in that case, all of that LNG would be marketed by a separate company that's a joint venture company that would market it all together. That's one form, joint venture marketing. Another form is equity marketing, where we say, well, I've got BP molecules that I'm going to be responsible for, and I have my own marketing affiliate that will place those with my customers, and each one makes similar arrangements. And that's equity marketing. You can actually have a combination, too. The essential thing, or one essential thing to remember, is all of us here are competitors as it relates to marketing. So when we're talking about individual marketing, those are individual conversations. We can have those sorts of conversations with the state under SB 138 if the state wanted to make an arrangement with BP whereby we would market some of the state's gas on its behalf or whatever arrangement that might be. But we certainly can't agree with other companies on how we're going to divide a market or anything like that. It's the per se violation of antitrust. So we cannot do that. If we form a joint venture marketing company, then that's a different animal because it's the joint venture that's doing the marketing. Key to that, to enable that, is clear entitlement lifting rights for each of the parties, which is pretty clear from the working interest ownership that the producers have. But as we talked about with the state, we need to make sure that we define the state's entitlement very clearly in those agreements, which is one of the issues that we're working to enable the state to be able to market its gas just like one of the producers would.
Follow up, Senator Coghill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted for people to hear that there's no collusion. It's just trying to figure out if you have different shares, how you can market them, or if you do it together. It probably, much like Trans-Alaska Pipeline, is owned by owner group, but they're a singular company. I guess that'd be the best way to describe it as we're operating now. I just wanted people to hear that there's no price fixing. As once you get the molecules out of the liquefier, that the marketing is done those two different ways. So I just wanted to hear it out loud. Thank you.
That's correct.
Any other questions on this page? Great.
Okay, and then for the record, Bill McMahon with ExxonMobil, slide 12. This is the fiscal page, and so you can see all the foundation upon which fiscal discussions are underway. The parties are working on fiscal proposals, and this is one of the key enablers for the project. And again, the parties are actively engaged, and we're making progress on that.
So before we leave this slide, I think this is probably a question for Deputy Commissioner Rutherford. Second to last bullet, legislative review and approval will be needed. Certainly not all of the contracts. Which of the contracts? Can you list them or direct us?
Madam Chairman, in general terms, Marty Rutherford, Department of Natural Resources, for the record. In general terms, any agreement that appropriates state resources or monies must come to the legislature for review and approval. And any agreement that the Department of Natural Resources enters into that's 2 years or longer also requires approval by the legislature. We just received a request during the House Resources Committee to update the previous presentation we made on particular agreements. And who's a party to those? We will produce that by the end of the week. And in it, we will identify which of these we believe will require legislative approval. But you are correct, not all of them will.
So on Friday, when the state team is present, you could probably have that for us?
Madam Chairman, that is exactly what I'm hoping to do.
Okay. You know, this is some of the fiscal things. I understand that the state has gotten a report on how we might finance this project. Have we gotten an analysis of that from a consultant?
Madam Chairman, we have gotten an updated report, I believe, from Lazard. I will ask the Commissioner of Revenue if he'll be prepared to discuss that on
that
the
great.
Friday hearing.
Wonderful. That would be great. We'd appreciate that. We're not the Finance Committee, but nevertheless, our molecules are valued at something. We'd like to know how they're proposing we value them. So thank you. Any other questions? Senator Stoltz?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. On the provision of the constitutional amendment, I haven't ever seen a draft. I've only heard it talked about in the abstract. And just how complex it is, I assume it has to deal with changing the provisions about surrendering or suspending or contracting our taxation of powers away in Article 9, Section 1 is my guess, but that's all I'm doing is guessing right now is what you guys might propose. It's changing our Constitution is a pretty complex matter, and why don't you put out your proposed constitutional amendment so it can start to be vetted, and certainly the public's part of this process by definition of a constitutional amendment. Let them start thinking and vetting what they think about it, going back to the first part, how complex it is. Our constitutional amendment creating the permanent fund is pretty short compared to our spending limits and our CBR limits, and how complex, and you have to put the contract. None of this has ever been shared. It's only been talked about in an abstract, and I think it ought to be something that we ought to be talking about from day one. I'm told that we may be here longer in a regular session because of a CBR vote, and I've been promised that I might be Mayor June if I don't increase state's budget spending or collectively as a member of the legislature, so why not now? July, okay. I'm going to up the ante, Senator.
Senator Stoltz, through the chair, Bill McMahon with ExxonMobil, we'll take that feedback. That's good counsel.
Madam Chair, that was really to Ms. Rutherford. She's really, you guys don't sponsor constitutional amendments. The governor can introduce one through the Rules Committee.
Madam Chairman, Senator Stoltz, a couple of comments. First of all, I think first and foremost.
I'm sorry, Senator Michicki was talking to me when I was trying to listen.
All right. Yes. Senator Stoltz, through the chair, Marty Rutherford, DNR. I think there's my primary response would be that the Attorney General will be here on Friday and we can talk about that more. My second comment, though, and I think it's pertinent, is that a determination on what a constitutional amendment looks like is going to be fairly reliant upon what kind of fiscal contract is entered into or proposed to be entered into between the parties. And unfortunately, that has not progressed to the stage where I am able, nor I think is the Attorney General able, to determine what exactly must be addressed in such an amendment. If you get overly broad, I think it becomes more difficult to convince the people of Alaska that you want to amend your Constitution. So I think that the thinking is to keep it as focused as possible, and that will be an evolution. What that looks like would be an evolution of the fiscal agreement that is negotiated. But I will advise the Attorney General that it is a point of discussion for Friday.
And I'll just offer a comment also, Senator Stoltz, on that. In June, we had a Joint Resources Committee update in Nikiski on this subject, and at that time, the administration presented a draft of a constitutional amendment in writing, and we'll make sure that all the committee members have a copy of that. It may be on the state's website, of course, for that joint meeting that happened back in June. So we'll make sure you get a copy of it, just so you know something has come out, but we understand that was simply a placeholder. Did you have a follow-up, Senator Stoltz?
No, right now I'm just embarrassed. I don't remember reading it.
It was very short, but we'll get you a copy of that, all the members of the committee a copy of that.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further questions at this point? All right, seeing none, we'll move on to the next.
Okay. On slide 13, Bill McMahon, ExxonMobil, for the record. We had reported earlier this year about filing the draft resource reports with the FERC, and so the last bullet on the page provides our plans for the first half of 2016 to get a second draft in. And as a reminder, the FERC invites these draft submissions so they can be placed on the website so the public can see and comment. Also, so the FERC staff can review and comment on those. And the idea is to have the final application be as of high quality as we can so that they can act quickly on it and we get an affirmative answer. And so work is moving forward on that. We've had to modify the resource reports as we continue to look at cost savings ideas, changing the project description a bit. And then, of course, as Mr. Cruzan alluded to, we have the 48 versus 42-inch work that's underway. And, when that cooks off, that will impact the resource reports as well.
So, Mr. McMahon, can you remind me, one of the resource reports, and I think it's number 5, addresses community impacts that would be of particular interest, I would think, to Alaskans. Is it number 5, or it is it?
Madam Chair, yes, ma'am.
Okay. So that might be something we as legislators could be sure to highlight for our constituents, to be sure to read that Resource 5. I understand these are voluminous documents, but maybe if it's only one resource report that we're targeting, it might be readable. Thank you. Any other questions on this page? No. Okay, I'll let you go on.
Okay, and then Bill McMahon, for the record, ExxonMobil. On slide 14, of course, we have a major effort as far as our external affairs and government relations, the face of the project and, outreach to the communities.
Mr. McMahon, a comment here. When I read this slide, one of the things, it says broad public support, and, of course, I thought part of that broad public support is the state of Alaska. So my question to you, could you talk about the impact of the state of Alaska's consideration of a change in tax policy on oil? How would that affect this gas project if we were to change tax credits, raise the minimum tax from 4% to 5%? Is this a big deal or not?
You want to start?
Sure.
Okay.
Madam Chair, Dave Vantile with BP. If I could start with that and reflect what BP would think about those changes. We've said, it was highlighted in the heads of agreement, we've said it, I think, in multiple testimonies in the past, that a successful Alaska LNG project will depend on a healthy base oil business. That's very important for a number of reasons. One is those very same facilities at Prudhoe Bay will be relied on for decades in a successful project. And we know that first gas, as fast as we might want to move, first gas is still many, many years away, 8-9 years away. We need to be able to have a safe, compliant, sustainable base business for the long term. And that's what we're working towards right now. We're looking at, with BP, at Prudhoe, with our co-venturers, seeing what we need to do to improve our cost base. It's a very challenging environment, as you know. We need to see what we can do to reduce costs, to make that even more efficient and more effective, to be able to have a reliable base business. We're working with ExxonMobil, ConocoPhillips, Chevron at Prudhoe Bay to do just that. We're doing the same thing on the Alaska LNG project with the challenging environment we have. We don't control the price. We're price takers. We're not price makers. The price is what it is. What we can control is the cost at which we can deliver LNG to the market. That's the part of the equation that we can most greatly influence. And so we're doing that on AKLNG as well, trying to reduce the cost to deliver LNG to the project. We're trying to do that for our base business as well, making it more efficient. An increase in tax is a challenge, is an additional challenge on top of what we already have. And again, we really depend on a healthy base business to be able to do this project. And defer to the others at the same time.
For the record, Bill McMahon, I support what Mr. Van Hollen said. If there's an increase in oil taxes, that will have an impact on our decision to enter the FEED phase, enter the final investment decision. We need to have a healthy base business upon which to build the Alaska LNG project.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I just echo those mm-hmm. remarks for ConocoPhillips as well, our same perspective.
All right, thank you.
Okay, so we're nearing the end of the presentation here. Page 15 is a bit of a recap, highlighting the accomplishments that we've had since September, and then I'll focus on the major outstanding issues. This is really what the team's focused on, getting in-state gas supply structures in place, utilizing the AGDC gas aggregator, LNG marketing structures and related to the state's LNG share, timely completion of the commercial and fiscal contracts, followed by legislative approval consistent with Senate Bill 138, and with a special highlight of gas supply to the project, as Mr. Earhart has described extensively. We also have the royalty decisions, the lease modifications at Point Thompson for the conversion of the leases. We also need a modification to limit the state's right to switch between royalty in kind and royalty in value, consistent with the idea of a royalty in kind election. We have the royalty in kind election subject to the project enabling agreements, and then determining the state's gas share structure. As Ms. Rutherford has pointed out, the state is not a working interest owner at Prudhoe Bay and Point Thompson, and so how do they have this synthetic right to have line of sight on gas to support their marketing efforts? And that's all subject to a royalty in kind election by the DNR and the producers deciding to pay their production tax as gas, or TAG being triggered. And then finally, seeking legislative authorization. When all the parties here are satisfied and ready to move forward, then we need to have a public vote on the constitutional amendment to provide predictable and durable fiscal terms, and there'll be legislation that's needed to support the work that we've done on property tax payments.
Yes, Senator Michiki has a question.
Thank you, whomever chooses to answer, Madam Chair. So, a delay on the other agreements, we'll just call them other agreements, could potentially compromise the timeline that gets the constitutional amendment on the ballot in 16, is that correct?
Senator Michiki, through the chair, Dave Antile with VP. My understanding of the timeline for entertaining a constitutional amendment is, first of all, that it's very well defined, very specific and very clearly defined. There's you can only entertain a constitutional amendment during a general election, so that would be in November of 2016. The next one would be November of 2018. And to be able to do that, to get it on the November ballot, there is a date in June that starts with a 2:20. I'm not sure what the exact date is, June 20 something or other, that would need to be drafted and put on the ballot. So there's a definite time frame that the fiscal terms and whatnot that we discussed would need to be defined such that the constitutional amendment could be drafted. Should we miss that time frame, then that would, certainly from BP's perspective, we've envisioned having fiscal terms defined as part of the, on the run-up to FEED, to inform the decision that we would be taking FEED. Certainly is over $1 billion. I don't know how many billions it might be. That work still needs to be done. So having that fiscal certainty in place is a very important consideration in being able to move forward then. If for whatever reason we had missed that date, then that certainly complicates. And I don't know what the necessarily the outcome would be, but it's certainly different than the presumption that we've made to date on what would be in place in making a FEED decision.
Anyone else wish to comment on that one? All right. Senator Stoltz.
Just thank you. Madam Chair, following up on Senator Machiki's question about timeline, I felt a little embarrassed when I didn't remember it was in the packet, but I guess the Deputy Commissioner didn't remember they'd drafted it either. That's still a fluid document. They said it's still changing, so I'm not sure how much can we rely on the one I that my is that a fluid document?
Madam Chairman, Senator Stoltz, Marty Rutherford, Department of Natural Resources. As I understand it, it is a fluid document. It is not indicative of anything that they would move forward.
And we're post Boykin now, right? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Further questions on this slide? Senator Machiki.
I think the point, and I could back out the dates, I think the point I'm trying to make is that if we get to the point where we miss that 16 deadline, it likely dramatically adversely affects the potential for this project to move forward. Would you agree with that? A two-year delay?
Senator Machiki, through the chair, Dave Antile with BP. I guess I'm not prepared right now to say definitively what the impact would be. I think it will certainly depend on the conditions at the time. I will say that we are working hard to ensure that we don't delay the project and that we're able to reach the agreements necessary. Now, we've talked, it's a big challenge. There's a lot on our respective plates to get there. And there will be a lot of things put forward to this body for your consideration before we can move forward, but we're certainly dedicating the time and the resources to try to reach those objectives. As far as what the impact might be, we've always worked towards having those in place. If we don't, I can't say definitively, what the outcome would be.
All right. One last slide.
For the record, Bill McMahon with ExxonMobil. This is just a graphic to show all the deliverables that support the FEED decision, some of which have been achieved, some of which are still under development. So it's our closing slide. So really do thank you for the opportunity to present this. Thank you for asking questions along the way. And so that concludes our presentation.
Great. Thank you very much. Any concluding questions from any committee members? I have one. Anyone else have one? It's actually not a question. It's more of a request, Deputy Commissioner Rutherford. You'll be with us on Friday, I believe, right, as well as the Commissioner of Revenue and the Attorney General, and AGDC as well, Mr. Cruzan. Excellent. So, again, as I'm thinking about this project, it's our future. Right? Just the way TAPS created a wonderful wealth and infrastructure in the state, born and raised here, you as well, Deputy Commissioner, Senator Coghill, we're all birthers, I guess, born here. But anyway, so I'm thinking about the long haul here. And I can't remember which of our joint resources updates it was presented at, but someone presented a slide that showed the production curve for this gas project. So we talk about Prudhoe Bay and Point Thompson, and it's similar to North Slope's production curve, you see an uptick or a very large amount, and then it begins to taper off. And the expectation is that there will be more production emerging from other areas. The foothills, for example, has been a known gas area for a long time, and there are some other areas too. But we're counting on other companies versus the big three, to access that expansion potential in the gas pipeline. So could you bring that slide or find it or create it? Because I know that it is part of the geologic information that you have. Because it does affect other decisions we're making in this session related to our tax structure. Because we want those smaller companies that are interested in the foothills and other areas that are gas areas to be beginning now to get ready to expand what we're putting into this pipeline. So if you would bring that for that meeting, that would be very informative for the committee and I think for the public as well.
Madam Chairman, yes, I will. I can access it immediately.
Great. Wonderful. Anything else? Senator Stedman.
When we do that, I think we'll see that the oil production curve substantially different than a gas production curve. So I wouldn't want the public to think it's going to look anything like our oil production the last several decades. Also, when we gather some of that data, it'd be nice to sometime over the next several months we have some conversation over potential additive oil production that we may get, just as a reminder, because there is some benefit to our oil field. By reinjecting waste product basically into Prudhoe and repressurizing that field somewhat. And we all want more production. We might argue around the table what that is or isn't, but nobody will argue that they don't want the numbers up that I know of. So I think that'd be kind of a good refresher.
Well, an interesting follow-up to that, too, is while I know in the lower 48 CO2 is used as production enhancement, is it effective here in Alaska on our North Slope? So that would be an interesting question. I suspect your geologist can answer that. Senator Welikowski.
Yeah, thank you. So just on a scale of, say, 0% being completely unlikely to happen, 100% being completely going to happen, how likely is this project to happen at this point, would you say, within the next 15 years?
Senator Welikowski through the chair, Leo Earhart for the record. You're asking about the project, and when we look at the project, we have a fantastic gas resource that we've known about for a long time, that we've recycled multiple times through the reservoir. We have another gas resource that can help fill in the volumes, looks attractive to us, looks like a good project. This project has the necessary ingredients to be successful, and so when you look at the project overall, it looks good. It's got good transportation distances to the markets in the Far East, and it's got a reputation. You know what we hear when we talk to Japanese Korean buyers is they like the idea of buying gas from the United States. They like the idea of buying gas from Alaska. So the opportunity to participate in this by being a buyer at some point in the future is attractive to them. So it's got a lot of very positive things going for it. So I don't want to put a number out there, but when you look at the project as a whole, it looks good. The fundamentals are there, and as you know, both Dave and Bill indicated in their remarks, the technical progress that's been made on the project is substantial. You know, significant milestones of project deliverables are being achieved. So from a project standpoint, it's good.
Senator Welikowski, to the chair of ExxonMobil, I'm hesitant to put a number on it since I've been working on this since 1992, but I think we have a lot of the do things that line up. You know, echoing the comments about the resource, the fact that we have all five parties here sitting at the table working together, the fact that the project, when we finish pre-feed, this project will have gone further than any project in the past. Spending $500 million on pre-feed, getting that DOE export license, second draft resource report in. So I'm bullish on the project. Now, the reason I'm hesitant to put a number on it is, yeah, we do have market factors that are into play, but the Alaska LNG gas resource is a tremendous part of ExxonMobil's endowment, and you know we're not going to stop pursuing it until we get it done successfully. It's a key part of our portfolio, and I'm bullish on Alaska gas.
Senator Wilikowski through the chair, Dave Antile with BP. First of all, echo the comments from my colleagues, Mr. Earhart and Mr. McMahon. Agree that this project has a lot of advantages going for it. You know, we have a known resource. We have multiple known resources sourcing the project. It's kind of fun to be able to talk to buyers and when they're asking about, you know, the project and the quality of the resource, and you say, well, how do you, you know, how confident do you feel about knowing that the gas is there? We can literally say we know it's there because we put it there. At Prudhoe Bay, we've recycled those molecules more than three times. The geography is in our advantage. You know, Alaska is actually close to markets, as was mentioned. We have companies here who have done these big projects before around the world, big LNG projects, so we have the right folks focused on it. And I think as one of the comments I wanted to make that Mr. McMahon just made is the alignment that we have. I continue to believe is absolutely critical. That's what was laid out, as I mentioned, in the HOA, consistent with SB 138, and maintaining that alignment of interests, including the state as a participant, is really important to a successful project. To the extent we have those things going for us, we continue to be bullish on this project as well. That's a reason why we say that this is the success of the AKLNG project is critical to BP's future in Alaska. We believe that. We think this project has a tremendous amount going for it, and that's why we want to see it be a success.
Deputy Commissioner, would you respond to that question as well?
Madam Chairman, Senator, I too feel that way. I feel very bullish about this project. There is some of the fundamental problems that we had encountered in previous attempts to monetize Alaska's gas have been resolved. I am, like the working interest owners, concerned about the economic environment right at the moment. But the good news is that this project won't come to the market for 8 to 9 years. So that actually works to our advantage right at the moment. And I had the opportunity to travel to Japan with Governor Walker this last fall for the first time for me. And heard very much what Leo Earhart from ConocoPhillips said. They, at least the Japanese market buyers that I spoke with, were very excited about the Alaska LNG. Number one, because they have had a long-term experience with Alaska and feel very good about it. Number two, because it is close to their market. Number three, we are a stable political environment. And number four, because we have known quantities of gas that underpin this project to a far greater degree than other projects around the world. And that the state is aligned with the producers to move. The sovereign involvement is critical to the Asian buyers. They see that as a huge advantage. So, I do feel that this project can work. That doesn't mean that I don't believe we need to bring the cost down as much as possible. And I must say that the oil prices right now and forecast, the uncertainty around that make me wake up in the middle of the night. But I continue to be very feel very good about this project and the people who are participating in it, the companies that are participating.
Very good. Mr. Cruzan.
Senator Wilcox, through the chair and Madam Chair. So for the record, Fritz Cruzan, AGDC. AGDC is the state's gas pipeline company, and we want to make this project happen. Of course, it has to make economic sense to happen and help get it there. We're working with the project to help bring the capital costs down. We're working with the project to help increase the reliability of the project, and we're working with the project to make the cost of service just as competitive as we can. And we can certainly ask Steve Butt if he thinks AGDC is carrying their weight. I hope he'll say yes, but I think we're carrying our weight. So we want to make this thing happen.
Very good. Thank you for your answers to that question. Thanks for asking the question, Senator Walikowski. So thank you to all of you for being here with us again today. You're right, this is a historic picture, and it happens every update. Thank you so much for being committed to this project and to Alaska's Gas. So that concludes our meeting for today. Our next meeting will be on Friday, on the 29th. We're going to have an update from the state gas team. So Deputy Commissioner Rutherford will be back, as well as Mr. Cruzan, so that's great. So at this time, we'll adjourn the meeting. Let the record reflect that the time is 5:05 p.m. We're adjourned.